we saw that when he opened the fifth seal, saw under the altar. I'm not getting any advancement here. Not working. Doesn't want to cooperate. Is that that thing still in the top of the computer there? We're going to take a commercial break for a second. Okay, I think we got to work in there. Technology. All right. So those who had been slain were under the altar. We talked about this being the altar of burnt offering. We're going to talk a little bit about the altar of incense a little bit later. And they were slain because of their testimony concerning the Word of God. And then we saw how they were crying out in a loud voice, "How long, O Lord, holy and true, will you refrain from judging and avenging our blood on those who dwell on the earth?" And we talked about how that's a cry not for themselves, because they're already where they want to be, but rather for those who are still having to put up with the persecution and so forth. How long, in other words, is it going to be before the Lord comes back and puts an end to all that? So that's where we finished last time. Now, the sixth seal, where we are in Revelation 6 and verse 12. And let me get somebody, if you would, to read from verse 12 on down through the end of the chapter, verse 17. All right, Kathy, go ahead. Okay, so we're looking at this great upheaval that is coming, a cosmic earthquake, a disruption of all of the physical powers and things that make the earth work. Okay, those things are all going to be upheaval and so forth. What this is focusing on is this impending terror and judgment that is coming. Notice that within this, it hasn't come yet in terms of the pain and suffering and all that. But what do we see all these people doing here? They want to go and hide from what is coming, don't they? All right. So the description that we have here is this this great, what does he say here? Great earthquake, the sun turns back, turns black like sackcloth made of goat hair. The whole moon turned blood red. Okay? Now, here's an example of why we need to make sure we remember that the things in Revelation are symbolical, not intended to be literal. Okay? And when people start, as we've been saying all along, when people start trying to turn it into literal, you know, ideas and say, oh, here's what it is, they start applying things that should not necessarily be applied. Okay? And so if you look at this, and I don't know if you can see the dates on here, the coming four blood moons. We have those who were prophesying, looking at Revelation and saying, okay, here's the signs. And so the end is coming, all right? And what are they looking at? They're looking at the blood moons. And notice that this was in the Passover of April 2014, okay? And all the way to the Passover of 2015 of April, and then September 28th, 2015. That was supposed to be, you know, the magical date. Another magical date that's come in history, you know, that people have tried to plug in. Well, let me see. Today is what date and year? And we're still here. Lord hasn't come back yet, okay? And we'll continue on until such time as He has chosen to come back. So again, I just point this out as, again, it's just another example of what happens when people start trying to get real specific and start plugging people and dates and events into this and say, okay, here it is. It's happening. It's getting ready to happen. You see? Again, it's just a reminder to us to keep it all in perspective that it is symbolical. Okay? Now, the kings of the earth and the great ones and the generals and the rich and the powerful and everyone slave or free hid themselves in the caves and among the rocks of the mountains, calling to the mountains and the rocks, fall on us and hide us from the face of Him who is seated on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb. For the great day of their wrath has come. Who can stand? So, in other words, mankind, both, you know, strong and weak in terms of political, you know, financial, all of that, recognize if you don't belong to the Lord, okay, the wrath is coming. And so here's this attempt to try to hide from the wrath that's coming, and it's this hide in the mountains and you know, let the rocks, you know, hide in a cave and let the rocks come down and fall over it so that the wrath of God can't get to us, as if that's really going to stop it. They want to hide, right. Now, it's kind of the idea, and I don't have one on here. It's really kind of the idea of, you know, just kind of shield us or hide us from what's getting ready to happen. All right? Okay? Hide us from the presence of Him who sits on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb, because the great day of their wrath has come, and who is able to stand? So these appear to be folks who know they have not been following the Lord. Okay? They know that they're going to have to face the wrath. In other words, those who belong to the Lord, why would they want to hide from Him? Okay, they know what's coming. Okay, they've heard the promises and they're waiting. They're looking forward to Him to come. Okay, so this seems to be representative of those who know they haven't been following the Lord and they know what's coming to them, and they want to try to put it off as long as possible. Okay, Ray? right. That's right. The only one who knows is Him. We have nothing to fear, do we? You see? So those who belong to the Lord are looking forward to that day. Those who don't belong to Him, they don't want that day to come. And it is to be a day of fear and trembling because they know they're getting ready to face, you know, as we say, they're getting ready to face the music of their lives. Dawn? You just always stir things up, but that's all right. We like stirring up. Well, the best answer I can give you to that is, I don't know. Okay? And the reason I say that is because, you know, logically we would think, well, yeah, they all know everything. But the answer, I think, really is it because Jesus said He doesn't know. Okay? No one knows the day or the hour except who, He says, except the Father in heaven. Okay? So how that works... Okay, with what, you know, the Trinity and what each one knows and doesn't and so forth, I can't answer that. That is so far above my pay grade that, you know, all right. Okay. But it's a good question, though. And that, you know, I think just kind of carrying that out just a little bit further, I think that's one of the reasons why I really like that movie, The Shack. And we had that last month. I don't know how many of you got to see it or not. If you haven't seen it, I think we have it in the library now. You can get it and watch it. And I think the reason is because it really, I think he does a really great job of giving us some kind of insight into the Trinity and the relationship that's there and kind of how it works a little bit and so forth. But, of course, you know, it doesn't answer everything. And it's just, you know, one man's perspective on, you know, how that works. But I don't know for sure. Oh, I think we weren't intended to know. That's Jesus' point. No one knows except the Father. Yeah. Well, and if you go back and you look at the gospel accounts and all the things that Jesus says about it, what is his main point in all the things he says about, you know, the different parables and so forth about the coming and so forth? What is his main point? Since you don't know when it's going to happen, be ready, okay? Be ready all the time. If we knew when it was going to happen, then, you know, probably a lot of folks would go, oh, I still got plenty of time, you see? And so the idea is live your life so that you are always ready. You don't have to worry about it. Okay? Mm-hmm. Again, you know, all the intricate workings of the Trinity, the triune Godhead, I don't even begin to understand how all that works. But, you know, that's why He's God. Okay? Cut. and you're exactly right. The difficulty comes in sometimes when, we run into, doctrines concerning the Trinity, for instance, that people say, well, there's no such thing. The Bible doesn't use that word. It doesn't refer to it. Well, it doesn't use that word, but there is so much evidence that shows that the Godhead is a triune Godhead, a Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. And then it goes into that whole aspect of, well, how does that really work? One knows something, the other doesn't, but they're three persons or parts of one God. They're all the same God, but they're different. Again, I don't know. I can't explain that beyond that. Yeah, it's a faith issue. We just have to accept that, that's what Jesus said, and so, he's satisfied with not knowing. Doesn't bother him any not to know, so it shouldn't bother us. Oh yeah. Right. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Look, I am still trying to figure out how I push this little button and it changes the stuff on that thing, okay? That's way beyond me. Somebody's a whole lot smarter than I am to figure out how to make this stuff happen, okay? So, when it comes to the Trinity and some of this stuff, I don't even go there, okay? Because I'm still trying to figure out some of the stuff men figured out how to do, all right? Let alone what God can do. Okay. Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Right. 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 Yeah, things kind of flip flop. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. In a general sense, I think it does apply to the coming judgment that is coming. But again, remember, as we said in our introductory things, a lot of these prophecies, and even a lot of the Old Testament prophecies had that immediate application to it, or something was going to be happening in the near future, and then a secondary, something was going to happen down the road. I think certainly, the folks that originally read these things were going, okay, yeah, what he said happened. But we still are looking forward to these events happening in the future. Going to come. Yeah. Okay. Look at Joel chapter 2. And here's an example, okay, of what you're talking about, Dale. Joel chapter 2 and verse 1, where he says, "Blow the trumpet in Zion and sound an alarm in my holy mountain. Let all the inhabitants of the land tremble, for the day of the Lord is coming, for it is at hand." All right? So now Joel prophesied about this, thousands of years ago. But what did he say? The day of the Lord is what? It's at hand. Okay? As we talked about that generally means it's getting ready to happen. Okay? But again, the context of Joel is what? What's happening in Joel's day? The Israelites are not following God. Okay? They're not being obedient to God. And he's pronouncing judgment upon them, okay? And so that judgment, comes at different times, different ways for different folks. Okay? Right. It does not always mean the end of the world. Right. Exactly. Exactly. So, again, you know, we're trying to figure, you know, what these things mean. Then it's good to go back and look at other, you know, things like this that give similar statements and so forth. Look at the application of it, and that can help us to understand. But overall, again, keep in mind, it's symbolical, okay? It's symbolical, all right? Okay. Now, what we have happening next is basically, in a sense, it's kind of, as one person calls it, a parenthesis, okay? Some bad things are getting ready to happen in terms of judgment and terror upon the world and so forth. But what about those who belong to the Lord? What's going to happen to them in the meantime? Okay, or while all this kind of stuff is happening and so forth. So there is what is referred to as a sealing of the saints, so to speak. This is in chapter 7. All right? Let me get somebody to read for us verse 1 down to verse 4. You don't have to go into all the tribes and so forth. You just stop at verse 4 there, okay? Net. Okay. All right. So, judgment is coming. Okay? But before that occurs, there needs to be some preparations made on behalf of those who belong to the Lord. Okay? The saints. So we have pictured here four angels that are holding back the four corners of the earth. Okay, remember in our symbolism we talked about the number four, how that is generally represents, you know, the cosmic things and so forth, and that's why we have this earth. They're holding back the four corners of the earth. Okay? So symbolically that represents how much of the earth? All of it. Okay? Represents all of the earth. So there is destruction of the earth that is coming as, how is it portrayed here? This great wind, they're holding the wind back, right? And, you know, if you've ever been in a hurricane, then you know wind can be a pretty destructive force, or tornado, right? Okay? So it's holding back this destructive force, all right, until, what does he say happens? Okay, until these people have been sealed. Now, so they are basically told to restrain this destructive power until this sealing of the servants of God takes place. Now, we think about seals, okay? We're not talking about, you know, the kind of, or you know, neat fish, all right? Seals here, okay? All right? What kinds of things typically does the idea of sealing something mean? Okay, you're closing it up, preserving it, all right? Okay, all right, ownership and authority. But what else does that signet ring on that seal, what does that also do? Hides it. It basically protects it from being tampered with. Yes, absolutely. You got your ring, okay? But, well, it basically what it's saying is that you know, if this seal is broken, then we know that it's been tampered with. Okay, so it was sealed for that reason. It also is said it shows ownership, designation. You got the king's, you know, seal on it, then you know that has authority from the king, right? Everybody knows where that comes from. It also certifies genuineness. Okay? There was, you know, the king had how many signet rings? Just one. Okay? And so, you know, if it had the king's seal on it, then it was genuine. You didn't have to doubt its authenticity. So those are some general ideas that are associated with this idea of being sealed, or the saints of God being sealed, because then we know that what? Everything that is sealed belongs to Him. Okay? All right? And it is all done by His authority. Right? And not only that, but once it is sealed, it is protected from what? Tampering. The devil can't tamper with it. Okay? All right, Ray? Right? Yeah. You're thinking about the letter to the
yeah.
king, right? Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Naaman's day, right? To the prophet,
yeah.
right? Okay. You're talking about Haman doing that, right? Right. Okay. All right. Well, if you go back to earlier when we started looking at these seals, what one of the things about these seals that you know, they're all, these seven seals are sealed. And what was the issue concerning all that to begin with? Yeah, there was only one person that could open the seals, right? And so it wasn't to be opened by just anybody, okay? So the sealing of those who belong to the Lord. Now, there's a lot of false teaching about this particular part. All right, and then what we'll see a little bit later about, again, the 144,000 and so forth. Basically, here we're looking at what? 12,000 from where? Each tribe. Now, the number 12 symbolically represents what? Anybody recall? Organized religion. Okay? All right, so we have, what we have here, it's also that idea of completeness, but 10 is stronger than in that particular thing. But, so what we have here is 12,000 from each one of the 12 tribes, right? And those are the 12 tribes of Israel. Okay? So, what would that then most likely represent? Okay? Not just God's people, but more specifically. Wouldn't it represent, do you think, all of those who are faithful to God of Israel. Okay? Right. Another, not all of the Israelites, because a lot of them were disobedient to God. But you have many who were very faithful to God, right? Okay? So symbolically, this might represent the idea of all of those who were faithful of the Israelite nation. Right. Right. But you also, but then the other true tribes are added in there. You have a tribe of Joseph, which is not, you know, was not a tribe. Okay? Right. And they include Levi in there. So, but again, look at this symbolically, okay? When you have these numbers this way, again, it most likely represents all of those of Israel who were faithful to God. Okay? The number 144,000 is not to be taken literally. All right? It is a symbolical number representing all of those of the Israelite nation who are saved, who belong to God. Judy? Right. Always, always, always. Okay? And let's see. So he says here, I heard the number of those who were sealed, 144,000 sealed out of every tribe of the sons of Israel. Okay? So that's what it's focusing on right now. All right? Again, as Dale brought up here a moment ago, we're not looking at the literal tribes here. Okay, because we have different ones listed and so forth. But it's just that idea of, again, of all the Israelites, okay, those who were faithful to God and are sealed for salvation. All right? It is a figurative list, not intended at all to be literal. All right? Now, let's talk about some of the things that are said by folks about this passage and the one that we'll read about a little bit later. Okay? Jehovah's Witnesses claim that when the Bible speaks of the congregation of the living God, it is referring to a particular group of Christ followers. So this congregation of God is made up of all Christians on earth who have the hope of heavenly life. In all, only 144,000 persons finally make up the congregation of God. This is a quote out of the Jehovah's Witness publication, You Can Live Forever in Paradise on Earth. All right? Their whole idea is basically that only 144,000 people who belong to God are actually going to go to heaven. The rest are going to live here in paradise on earth. Okay? Let me read a couple of sections out of here for you. It says, how many go to heaven? And their answer is, since they are to rule over the earth, it is clear that those who go to heaven will be tried and tested followers of Christ. This means that babies or young children who have not been fully tested during years of Christian service will not be taken to heaven. However, such young ones who die have the hope of being raised to life on earth. So the total number who go to heaven will be small when compared with the many who will receive life on earth under kingdom rule. Jesus told his disciples, "Have no fear, little flock, because your Father has approved of giving you the kingdom." How small a number will that class of kingdom rulers be? Will it include only the apostles and other earthly followers of Jesus? No. The Bible shows that the quote-unquote little flock will include more. And it refers to Revelation 14. We'll talk about that when we get over there. Revelation 14, 1-3, the Bible says, "And I saw And look, the Lamb, Jesus Christ, standing upon the heavenly Mount Zion, with Him 144,000 who have been bought or taken from the earth. Note that only 144,000 persons are seen with the Lamb, Jesus Christ, on heavenly Mount Zion. So rather than all good people going to heaven, the Bible reveals that only 144,000 tried and faithful persons will be taken there to rule with Christ. So, how does that make you feel? Did you realize that we are fighting for positions in the kingdom? Well, they've already written off all the babies. Okay? They don't get to go. Well, let me just put it this way. The Apostle Paul wrote to Timothy, and he said that the time is coming when men will not put up with sound doctrine. Okay? Instead to suit their own desires, they will gather around them teachers who will say what their itching ears want to hear. Okay? Now, that's part of this problem here. Okay? Again, it's an example of how we read numbers in the Bible and we want to make them literal. And they are not intended to be literal. And then what happens is, then you take a certain belief that you already have, and instead of looking at the Bible to see, does that belief fit the Bible? No, I need to alter my belief. Then what we do is we take the Bible and twist it around to make it suit what we already believe. We're going to talk more about that in our worship time this morning, about another whole doctrine, okay? But that's basically what happens, okay? And again, it stems from the problem that people have of wanting to take numbers and events and so forth from the book of Revelation, these prophecies, and try to make them literal. They are not intended to be literal. Okay? They are intended to be what? Symbolical. All right? They represent something. But when you take them and start trying to make them literal, then you're going to run into all kinds of problems. So, let's go back to our text. We read here, and list 12,000 from each of those tribes, okay? And then look at the very next section. Let me get somebody to read verse 9 down through, well, let's read verses 9 and 10 for right now. Who's got it? All right, Judy, go ahead. Okay, so we have 144,000, okay, from where? From Israel, right? And after that, I looked and saw what? A great multitude. How many were there? That no one could count. And where were they from? From every tribe and every nation under heaven, right? So, you know, again, how many people are going to be in heaven? More than anybody could count. Okay? So this whole idea that the Jehovah's Witnesses have of it being only 144,000 are going to actually go to heaven. Now, keep this discussion in mind when we get over to chapter 14, because we're talking about this 144,000 again, okay? But keep this in mind. Symbolical. Okay? What do you suppose this represents then? This big picture here of all of this. We've already talked about the 144,000 likely representing all of Israel. Well, what about the great multitude? Okay. All right. Just from Christ to now? Absolutely. Right. In other words, everyone who is saved that is not a Jew. Okay? Because, again, biblically speaking, you only have two groups of people. Who are they? You have Jews and Gentiles. Okay? Which one are we? We're Gentiles. Okay? So, this idea here then appears to represent that this is all, everyone who belongs to God, whether they are Jews or Gentiles, they are sealed. Okay? Forget about the numbers. Forget about, you know, trying to plug in a specific here. It's intended to represent the total number of those who are saved, from both the Jews and the Gentiles. All right? Make sense? Makes a whole lot more sense than trying to twist things around to try to say, well, you know, I say, are you one of the 140,000? Not me. Yeah, they're Jews. I'm not one of 144,000 either, but I'm one of the great multitudes. Dawn? Yes. Those who are faithful, those who they have gods, but we're talking about those who are faithful. Yes, they do, but he's not the right God. Okay? So, you know, that would fall under the because they have a God, does that mean they're going to be saved? No, they've got to be. Jesus said what? No man comes to the Father except through me. And they, yeah. But again, you know, I want to be careful because I don't want to give a blanket condemnation of everybody, you know, of everybody, because we don't know, you know, there are certainly Muslims that they are Muslim by nationality and by birth, just like Jews are Jews by birth and nationality. But it is both a nationality and a religion, okay? And so there are certainly lots of Muslims who have converted to Christianity, all right? In other words, they've denounced the Muslim faith, you know, as a religion, and they have accepted Christ. So both they are still Muslims, okay? So, you know, we have to be careful about, you know, that, you know, again, kind of goes back to the whole, you know, unless you're in the Church of Christ, you're going to hell kind of a thing. You know, forget that, okay? We don't know what people's, you know, hearts are and what's going on with them and so forth. And are we that arrogant that we think we're the only ones that know everything that needs to be known and so forth? You know, we need to be careful there about condemning everybody. Let's let God do that. Again, you know, that is way above my pay grade and way above all yours too, okay, to be pronouncing judgment and deciding who can and who can't. Let's just stick to what the Bible says when Jesus says, no one comes to the Father except by me. Okay? And so if somebody has come to Jesus, all right, then let's let the Lord decide that. Okay? And let's not try to be the ones that decide, you know, who gets to and who gets because of the sign on their building. All right? Absolutely. Right. Well, there are a lot of people that believe that only 144,000 people are actually going to go to heaven, too. There's a lot of stuff out here that people believe. The problem is a lot of it just ain't so. Okay? Right. Not our place to do so. Abraham was the father of the Jews. Well, I mean, it's the answer. He was the father of the Jews. Yeah. But he was the beginning of this nation that would become Israel. Okay? The nation of Israel did not exist as a nation until when? Until where? But not just when Jacob came along, but specifically when? No, when they were in Egypt. Okay, they went into Egypt as a family, okay, and they came out as a nation. Okay? But they were the descendants directly of who? Of Abraham and of the promise that God gave to Abraham. Okay? So circumcision, the sign of circumcision, which was the sign of the covenant between God and His people, was first given to who? To Abraham. Okay? And so, yes, He, in fact, if you go through and you read the gospel accounts, and the people in Jesus' day, the religious leaders, argued with Jesus that Abraham was their who? Their father. You see, so that's why, Joanne, that he's considered, he's the father of the Israelite nation. Even though the Israelites as a nation didn't exist until the time of Moses and the Israelites leaving the land of Egypt, he was the father of the Israelite nation. Okay? That's why we say that. Right. He didn't live under the law. The law didn't exist then. In fact, the Israelites in Egypt, as they grew from a family to a nation, didn't live under the law of Moses either, did they? Until they came out of the land of Egypt. Okay? The law was given where? At Mount Sinai, after they were freed from slavery in Egypt. So they existed as a nation before they even had the law. Is that a problem for God? Not one bit. Not one bit. The cross of Christ. Oh man, we are way out of time. How come somebody didn't stop me? Great day. We're just going on here. Okay. All right. We're out of time. We're way out of time. All right. We'll pick up here next week. All right. Thank you all very much.